So you remember the Christmas Carol, right? Scrooge and those spirits, ghosts, call them whatever you want. They all visited him, three spirits. What about Joshua P. Warren, if he's playing the role of Scrooge, for example? No, he likes Christmas, he does. But he's going to dive deep into the paranormal side of Christmas next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, and welcome back to Coast, our resident paranormal expert, none other than Joshua P. Warren. And, of course, Joshua loves Christmas. He loves the holidays. He loves talking about spirits and ghosts and the paranormal. And I understand, Mr. Warren, you have much to talk about tonight.
You know, it's going to be so hard to fit it all in because I don't think most people realize just how paranormal Christmas really is. I mean, you know, George, in this part of the world, people recognize that, well, the birth of Jesus is a very paranormal and supernatural thing. An angel appears in the field talking to the shepherds, and the wise men follow this mysterious light. And then, of course, you know, Jesus himself is the product of Immaculate Conception. He works these incredible miracles. And yet the fact is, if you go even thousands of years before Jesus was born, especially if you go back into some of these ancient European traditions, people have always considered this time of year that we call Christmas a time a lot like Halloween, when the veil is thinned and spirits are able to more easily come through. And in fact, some of the ancient Europeans would call this time of year Yule, and they believed that lots of paranormal activity would increase. In fact, sometimes you could go look up in the sky and see Odin, the Norse god, riding through the sky on the wild hunt with a large group of his cronies. Now imagine a bearded man riding through the sky at night. What is that kind of reminder?
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
And hey, so even then, people recognized there was something very strange happening this time of year.
Where are you now? Asheville, Puerto Rico? Where are you?
This particular Christmas, I am in Puerto Rico, and, you know, I've been bouncing around a lot this year. As a matter of fact, just in a couple weeks, I'll be in Louisiana for a while, and then California, and then taking the conspiracy cruise down to Mexico. So all over the place, but I'm actually here in Puerto Rico right now editing a feature film with my colleague and partner in crime, filmmaker C. Eric Scott. He and I produced that White House ghost footage report that we talked about last time.
That's right. Really. I want to talk a little bit about Christmas Carol, that incredible movie with Scrooge and the ghost, and we'll get into some of these other possibilities that happen during the Christmas season. So he's visited by three spirits, and each one of them scared the living daylights out of him, Joshua, and changed his life eventually. So, you know, so we had this old guy who was just mean and didn't believe in anything. And then by the end of the movie and the end of the book, he was a believer and everybody loved the guy. These spirits that are out there that Dickens created in his mind, they can be considered real, can't they?
Well, you know, yeah, that's a great question, because when you read that story, it does sort of make you wonder a bit at the end whether or not these ghosts were real entities that appeared, or if this had been a dreamlike experience that he had endured. And but it seems to me that obviously, whether you're looking at ghosts, which appear to be some kind of a spiritual essence that is separated from the original physical form, or just spiritual beings that come from another realm, it doesn't really matter that much, because ultimately it's about the idea that there's something happening this time of year in our minds that attracts this activity. And in fact, what's funny, in the story, A Christmas Carol, the ghosts themselves are almost like interdimensional beings that have just slipped in from some other place, as opposed to being, you know, the spirit of a dead person. And I think one of the reasons that this time of year might be so active is what we think of as spiritual polarization. So in other words, if you were to go out to a field and take a jar and collect a soil sample from that field, well, maybe you would have a variety of minerals in there kind of randomly strewn about. But if you hold that jar next to a big, powerful magnet and shake it around a little bit, well, all of these ferrous particles are going to be extracted and condensed and concentrated over to one side. And now you're going to have what amounts to polarization, which is essentially two contrasting groups. And what you find in terms of spiritual polarization is that when you have this time of year, when so many people are thinking about positive things and good things and all the stuff that we're supposed to be celebrating around the holidays, it ironically also, as an unfortunate byproduct, creates a lot of negative things that will come out of the woodworks as well. And we can talk about some of the creepy creatures and weirdo monsters that appear only around the holidays, in addition to people actually seeing the good spirits, protective elves, or even, yes, jolly old Saint Nick himself. And that's one of the things that I found most surprising. I don't know, George, if you have ever opened these phone lines and said, I want you to specifically call in tonight if you are an adult and you honestly believe you have seen Santa Claus. But let me tell you, since 2008, I have been asking people that question, and I have a stack of papers in front of me, and maybe I'll read some of these eyewitness testimonies from professionals, people who are working in the medical field or law enforcement, who say, I'm so glad you've asked this question because I have actually seen Santa Claus, and I have explored their stories and what might be happening when people see this being. How can it be possible?
Where do they report seeing him? Flying in the sky, in a sleigh, coming down a chimney? How do they see him?
You know what? All of the above. And I also want to point something out before I get into these specific reports, and I do want to read some passages. A lot of folks, when they think of the idea of Santa Claus, they think of him being based upon St. Nicholas, but they're surprised to learn that, you know, St. Nicholas, who lived in the 200s and 300s, was born in present-day Turkey. And all pictures depict him as being, or all illustrations depict him as being, a tall, very deeply tanned man wearing priestly robes. Nothing like, you know, the boisterous Santa Claus of today. And a lot of people think, well, Coca-Cola created that image. And that's actually not true. That image of Santa Claus, the boisterous, jolly, you know, guy with the beard, that really started being popularized in the U.S. in the 1800s based upon Father Christmas from Britain and also the Dutch Sinterklaas, who was a depiction of Father Christmas wearing a big, tall, red mitre type hat. And so when these people tell me they're seeing Santa Claus, they're not seeing St. Nicholas. They're seeing an image that's been sort of at least accepted in our modern society, which is why I think that this may tie into tulpas, which we'll get back to in a moment. But would you like to hear just one example of an eyewitness report here, George?
Well, I'd love to.
Okay, this comes to me from a woman who was living in Long Island, New York. This took place about 40 years ago. She was 11 years old at the time. She says, we were living in a house. It was large with a big roof and a chimney in the living room. It was Christmas Eve. My parents had gone to a party, and my older sister and I were left to care for the younger children. The little ones were in bed asleep. My sister and I were in the kitchen doing dishes. And around 10:30 p.m., we heard a noise like something fell on the roof. Now, thinking it was a large snow clump, we dismissed it. And then there was stomping on the roof, which was, needless to say, scary. And all this stomping around then led to a noise in the living room. Well, my sister and I didn't move. We didn't know whether to call our parents. We took a deep breath. We heard these noises in the living room and more stomping around on and walking on the roof. It was a full moon. I suggested we go out to look up to see what was going on, and well, we did. We looked up, and there was Santa Claus, full beard and all. His sleigh and reindeer took off from our roof and flew up and across the room. We told our mother about the experience later, and she said, always believe in miracles. Now, I have a whole stack of these stories I've been collecting since 2008. And one woman wrote to me and said, I've been a nurse for 42 years. I work in the psychiatric field. And she said, look, I've never seen anything strange. I'm a straight arrow. But here is one thing that I cannot deny. My brother and I, we were 6 and 7 years old. We looked out the window at the same time, and we saw clearly Santa and his sleigh flying through the sky. And so these experiences go on and on and on, and it makes me think that if people are actually seeing this traditional image of Santa, and we know it's supposed to be impossible for a man to fly around with reindeer, right? Then people must be seeing what I have talked to you many times about. They may be seeing the tulpa. And the tulpa is basically a thought form that people can concentrate on so much over years and years and years that it actually externalizes.
So they manifest it.
Basically, it's sort of like a collective manifestation. I will give you a little example of an experiment that I've been doing. I actually, in my travels this year, I spent my Thanksgiving holiday in Texas. That's where my in-laws live.
All right.
And they have a ranch there. And about a quarter of a mile from the ranch, they have a building with an office/guest house. And so I was out there with a Santa Claus doll. And I would set this doll up, and I would meditate on imprinting that doll. I wanted to see if I could create my own Santa Claus tulpa, as wacky as that sounds. Well, after days of me doing this for at least, I'd say, 30 minutes a time, maybe 2-3 times per day, one evening, we were all back in the main house, and all of a sudden, my mother-in-law's husband, he comes out of the bedroom. This was about 11 o'clock at night. He'd already hit the sack. He comes out of the bedroom and he says, "Hey, is there anybody in the back building on the property?" "No." He said, "Because I just got a call from 911 placed from that building."
Woo.
Now, there were the only people on the property were my wife and myself and the two of them, my mother-in-law and her husband. So once we confirmed that we're all fine, he's told 911, "Well, you know, it must be some kind of weird mistake. I mean, he's lived there for decades, and that's never happened." And so, of course, what do? I get in the truck, and I go driving back to this building. And I'm thinking, oh, my, if Santa Claus is sitting in there, I've at least got to get this on camera because George Norrie will never believe me otherwise. And so I go creeping into this place, and I did not see Santa Claus, but I tell you what, when I stepped foot in there, the lights turned off and then back on. And after that, for days, the lights continued turning on and off, not only there, but also on the main property. Now, I never saw Santa Claus, and I've been trying, like you wouldn't believe, to take pictures and to capture this on film. But that is an absolutely true story that for the first time only in this building where I was trying to manifest this thing, somehow a 911 call was placed. How bizarre is that?
That is bizarre. But I like the theory, though, Josh, that people can manifest this. But is it collectively, or could that one strong individual do it?
Well, you know, I think it really depends, because when it comes to tulpas, we have this one classic case that I really enjoy. I've written about it in a couple of my books. It's the story of Walter Gibson, who was not only a magician in New York in the 1920s and 30s, but he also was an accomplished novelist. And he got the job of penning a series of novels with the shadow character, which, of course, was very popular on radio at that time.
That's right, the shadow knows.
There you go, yeah. And so he had a little house there in Greenwich Village, and the shadow was so popular that he had to crank out at least 2 novels per month. Now, these are full-length novels, and he did this for years. He would just sit there just obsessively, you know, pounding out these stories. And for years after he was no longer living there, the new residents said the house was haunted by his fictional characters, that they would actually see the shadow running down a hallway or a villain whipping around the corner. And we know these things came from one man's extremely intense concentration. So it seems like it can be, if a person has such a vivid imagination and focus, that a tulpa is created by one individual. But it's more likely that over time, the collective energy from the thoughts of various generations of people are all directed toward this idea, and it forms it in a similar way. And of course, one great thing about Santa is that now, you know, I can get on the radio here and I can say, okay, folks, imagine Santa Claus. And instantly an image is going to pop up in everybody's head, and probably about 70% of the characteristics will be the same for everybody. And so we already have this foundation of knowing what he looks like. We have this legend about how and when he appears, and we also, of course, have this idea that it's based on some real man, St. Nicholas, remotely, and so all that combines to create the perfect fodder to manifest one of these tulpas. However, I do have some photographic evidence that I would like to talk about here, because, as I mentioned, if people can create something positive like Santa, it may be that they can also create something negative, or at least attract something negative. And that's why I have been on the trail of a very spooky creature here in the Caribbean that only seems to appear around the holiday.
Oh boy, what's it called?
It's called the Gargula.
The Gargula, okay.
Yeah, it's spelled G-A-R-G-O-L-A. Basically, it's the Spanish word for gargoyle.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, and let me give you a basic description of this thing. And by the way, before I continue, I want you to understand now, this is not some kind of little legend that I picked up from a drunk fisherman at a bar somewhere. Okay, I know of at least six police officers who have seen this thing, and I have personal knowledge of this.
What does it look like, Josh?
Okay, it's at least 6 feet tall, dark grayish in color, has a face like a pit bull with cropped Doberman-like ears, has large bat wings, walks slightly hunched on its tiptoes with knees that kind of bend backward, and it has these glowing red eyes. Now, how would you like to see that outside your bedroom on Christmas night?
No, thank you.
And this creature, you know, it's been especially terrorizing people since 2010 around a little township called Ensenada in Guanica, Puerto Rico. And I found it amazing that this thing is appearing primarily in late November and through December. And some of the most prominent sightings have occurred around churches and monasteries and nunneries. So places where people are involved in very positive thinking and a very positive mindset. I know we're coming up soon on a break, so let me go ahead and tell everybody this during the break. If you go to coasttocoastam.com and you find the link to my website, joshuapwarren.com, and scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, there is a photograph that I just posted a few days ago that someone took that is supposed to be this creature, the Gargula.
Oh, boy.
And remember, there's no period after the P in joshuapwarren.com. And I just got this photograph, and so I'm doing analysis, and I'm always asking for input. I want to know if any of your listeners have an opinion on whether this could actually be the real creature
All right.
or not.
It's kind of creepy, Josh. It's kind of creepy. We're going to come back with more with Joshua P. Warren. Then we'll take phone calls with him and solicit some of your questions. But also, we're going to ask you something. Stick with us. You sure are. And we've got Joshua P. Warren live in Puerto Rico. And we're going to come back and talk more about this gargoyle-type creature that's running around there and talk more about the Christmas spirit on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Joshua P. Warren with us. Let's go back to him live in Puerto Rico to talk about, one, this creature, the gargoyle-type creature. I sure don't think I'd want to run into this thing, Josh.
Well, you know, it scares people to death. I mean, when you go to parts of this town where this creature has been seen, it's like a ghost town at night. And there is, in particular, this old abandoned sugarcane factory where he is seen flying around the smokestacks. And, of course, you know, I've been out there on a few occasions trying to capture this on film myself. And, you know, let me just say as a side note, in terms of trying to explain what this gargoyle might be, have you ever heard of what's called the Mare Luid, George?
I have not.
This is one of these weird traditions that comes to us from Wales. Basically, around Christmas time, a group of four or five people will get a horse skull, and they will mount it to a stick, and they will attach a sackcloth or some other type of veil or something, and they'll kind of hide underneath it, and then they will work their way around a town, and they'll go from home to home or from bar to bar, and there's this very weird tradition where they'll go up to the door, and then they will demand entry in rhyming verse or song. And at that point, it's traditional for the doorman or whoever is there to reply in rhyming verse, and they kind of have a rhyme battle back and forth. And if the people with the skull win, well, they get to come into the bar or the abode, and they get to eat and drink. Now, this is a very strange thing, and of course, historians have tried to figure out where did this come from. And the Mare Luid pretty much means gray mare in their language. And what they found is that, once again, going back to these pagan traditions in old Europe, the idea is that when Halloween comes around, when Samhain comes around, all of these spirits are unleashed for the season. And they don't just disappear the next day. They stick around for a while. And this particular spirit represents the death horse. And so basically the idea that is that, you know, they see these creatures that are unveiled around Halloween reappearing, especially around the holidays, because they want to have fun too. But furthermore, again, if you look at this from a bit more practical perspective, we have all this positive energy that we're projecting. Things feed off of that energy. I can give you account after account of these creepy things appearing in order to feed off of human energy, especially when a human is sleeping and that dormant energy is much more accessible. And so, therefore, I think that this gargoyle is very similar. It also ties into some of these ideas of elves and trolls or even the Krampus. But, you know, the concept ultimately being that if we are producing this extra amount of spiritual energy, what we're actually doing is creating a bit of an imbalance from what the usual state is. And so as a consequence, it attracts these beings that not only come around the holidays, but are especially seen around places like churches or places of worship, because when you are in a spiritual state, you're literally transcending the physical boundaries of your body. And this has been scientifically measured in laboratories again and again. When people go into a spiritual mindset, they are expanding their aura, if you want to call it that, and it makes them more of a target for these parasitic dark entities. And that's one of the reasons we have such a strange, bizarre mixture of paranormal activity around Christmas.
And I was going to say, Josh, that during the Christmas season, of course, it should be fun and festive. What the heck are these dark entities doing during this great, glorious time period?
Well, you know, I think that they are actually feasting just like the rest of us are. And that's a strange concept until you start thinking about it in terms of how they survive and how they thrive. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who might be hearing me talk about this and say, what does he mean there are all these dark beings that feed off of our energy? Well, you have to understand, for one thing, human beings are so egocentric that we try to gauge what is possible and what is impossible based upon our own senses. And our own senses are ridiculously limited. I mean, the sliver of the electromagnetic frequency that you can see with your eyes is just incredibly narrow. The sliver of frequencies you can hear with your ears is unimaginably small, and so on. And what you find is that we have this near infinite amount of frequencies all around us that we can't even look into with some of our best equipment. And scientifically speaking, there's nothing to suggest that life just must exist exclusively within this realm that we can always see and detect. There may be other beings out there that occupy, for the most part, these other dimensions, if you want to call them that, and they need nourishment just like we do. Now, we have a tendency to pick up something and put it in our mouths and chew it up for a while and swallow it, and you know, that's what we need at this state in our evolution. But these other beings seem to be able to directly absorb energy without going through that physical process. And so when we are here at Christmas time and we're putting things in our mouths and having feasts and we're getting fat and happy, well, that means there's extra energy in general here. And these other beings, I think, are showing up and they're feeding off of that. And unfortunately, when these beings latch on to a person who thinks he or she's having a good time and starts drawing their energy away, well, then that person will be affected mentally over time and can start to become very depressed. And that's why we have got some horrible stories about terrible things that have happened right around Christmas historically. In fact, I don't know if you want to get into that kind of thing, but there was one incident that happened in North Carolina, where I'm from, on Christmas Day.
Oh, give us one at least.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a bad one. 1929. Gosh. People were depressed already because of the crash of the stock market.
Right, yeah. Everything fell apart. They were not very happy then.
So you can imagine, you know, the state of mind people were in at Christmas time when there's extra stress. And there's this town in North Carolina called Germantown, which is, I find interesting because, again, you know, we're bringing in Germany, the Germanic influence, old Europe, etc. And this is about, I think, an hour north of Winston-Salem, for those who are familiar with the area. Anyway, a sharecropper named Charlie Lawson, who was in his 40s, on Christmas Day, December 25th, he did something horrible. First off, a few days prior to this, he got his whole family together and he took them into town and got some new clothes and took a family portrait, which was kind of weird and eerie in retrospect. And then on Christmas Day, he told his eldest son, who was 16, to go run an errand. And the kid says, well, everything's closed, so what do you want? So that was a weird thing. Turns out that kid was the only survivor, because after he left, Charlie Lawson killed his wife and then six of his seven children.
Oh, my God, Josh.
Yeah, age 4 months to 17 years, he shot them and beat them to death while the 16-year-old was away. When the 16-year-old returns, he finds this bloodbath with all the family members lying there dead with their arms crossed and a rock underneath their heads. He propped them all and positioned them this way. And then of course, he went off to the woods and then killed himself. And people always wondered, why on earth did he do this? And why on Christmas Day? There's no explanation for why that was the day when this happened. And I'll tell you kind of a sick little twist to this. For years afterward, the wife's brother operated that house as a tourist attraction. And people would come by and pay a few bucks to go into the house. And they even had a cake that she'd made that morning. And people would pluck raisins off of the cake as souvenirs. And so it shows you this like very twisted kind of darkness that all stemmed from this incident, which for some reason climaxed on Christmas Day. And I can give you numerous other examples, but that's one that has always been horrific to me because I grew up not far from where that happened.
Jeez. Well, on to some more pleasant things then.
Yeah, I hope so.
This, we'll take phone calls next hour about Santa Claus too, but maybe kids are seeing, you know, their parent, their father, dressed up like Santa, and they remember it as an adult. Possible?
Oh, it's absolutely possible. But, of course, you know, when I have gone out there and I've talked to people and I've interviewed them, and I have put these requests out for people to send me their experiences. I've said that basically, look, I don't have any way of knowing whether or not you're telling the truth, but what I'm doing is I'm asking you as an adult to look back on this experience, knowing what kinds of things adults do to entertain their kids. I want you to tell me if you feel absolutely 100% certain that what you saw was something that could not be explained by some prank, whether it's good-natured or whatever. And you know what's funny is that not only did I get all these different reports, and you know, at some point I may just put all these together and publish these things, but not only did I get all these reports, but there are little details that I find really interesting. I mean, for example, most of these people said, you know, when this happened, it was scary, you know. And if you think about it, it actually would be very creepy, especially as a child. Even if you're all excited about Santa Claus, to just have this weird man who arrives on your roof and runs around, the next thing you know, he's come down the chimney and he's walking around. And, you know, that's why I'm also hoping to get some pictures of him. And I want people to also understand, if you look at that picture of the Gargula on the website there, and by the way, I will pay $100 to anybody who can tell me who took that picture, because I'm trying to figure out, again, it's at joshuapwarren.com. If anybody out there has a photograph of Santa Claus or a reindeer, I want to see it. And C. Eric Scott, my friend who's the filmmaker, he's been here with me in Puerto Rico, and we've been trying to photograph a Santa Claus tulpa down here, and honestly, so far, no luck. But I want to know if this thing is photographable. And I'm hoping that when we open the phone lines, if it's okay with you, George, that we can just test this out, because I have an e-newsletter. It's a free e-newsletter that goes out to thousands of people. And when I send an e-newsletter out and I say, send me your experiences with Santa Claus, and I get dozens coming in, well, you've got millions of people listening to this program right now. So I'm willing to bet, based upon what happens when I ask this question, that if we ask people to call in tonight, we are going to have a deluge of calls that come in. And you need to see that in order to understand how real this is, because over and over again, I'm told by people, man, nobody has ever seriously asked me about this. I never wanted to seriously talk about it because people would think I was nuts or that I was just some kid being misled by something. But honestly, these must be tulpas. There's no other explanation. It would also give us an indication as to why Santa appears the way he does. He appears the way people expect him to appear, but he appears very, very tangibly. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens tonight if we let people call in and share some experiences.
Can you be cursed with a Christmas gift?
You know what? You absolutely can be cursed. It happens all the time. You really do have to be very careful about the things that people choose to give you at Christmas, because that's a very convenient time for someone to dump a cursed item on you. And there are some things that you have to look out for. For one thing, a cursed item is probably going to be something that has some age, some history. Not always, but that's the most suspicious thing. And so if somebody gives you a gift and you open it and it looks like it has a little age, obviously that's something that you should consider. But here's the number one thing. Does this look like something that costs more than you think that person would probably spend on you?
Or could afford.
Yes. Because what happens with cursed items is that people sell them for really, really cheap. Sometimes they'll just give them away. And so, because somebody will get a cursed item, but it's a nice piece, an antique or something like that, and they just can't bring themselves to trash it. Some people even start feeling a little bit obsessed with it. And so instead of trashing it, they'd rather just pass it off on another person. And so if somebody's out there doing Christmas shopping and they come across some object that looks really expensive but is not, well, it's easy for them to seize that opportunity and buy this thing and give it to you. So that's step number one. Remember now, if somebody gives you a gift and it looks like it costs more than you think that person would have spent, that's one red flag. The next red flag is a cursed object actually feels as if it is alive.
Huh. Like Robert the talking doll.
You nailed it.
The haunted doll, yeah.
That's exactly right, George. I mean, and for anybody who's ever gone to Key West and met Robert, and you really don't even have to go to Key West, his vibe, his...
Just look at a picture. Jeez. Yeah.
Exactly. You can sense it through the images. These objects have that kind of an aura. Now, of course, you can look at a doll and you can say, well, obviously a doll is designed to look like a person, so maybe it would throw me off a little bit more. But the fact of the matter is even a chair can feel alive and have a personality. All objects can. The cursed objects are actually imbued with some kind of living energy. And so you should be very cognizant of whether or not it feels like it has a personality. You also need to be, next step, very cognizant of how it makes you feel in particular. Do you feel kind of depressed when you're around it? When you look at it, do you imagine it being involved with something good or something bad? And if this object has those characteristics, and you don't want to be rude and, give it back to the person, there are only three good ways to get rid of a cursed object. Number one is, of course, to burn it. But even that can be a little bit difficult. It's dangerous to burn some kind of weird object sometimes.
Sure. Like a Ouija board, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or you can bury it. Of course, that doesn't mean somebody or something else might not dig it up. But burial is usually acceptable, and it's a good idea to sprinkle some salt over the burial site. Or if you happen to be near a deep body of water, especially an ocean or a sea, just fling it into the water. And I've done that on a number of occasions when I have been here in the Caribbean and I've come across some kind of a really creepy little, artifact that kind of makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck, something used in some kind of dark ritual, some kind of voodoo. And I have a moment where I'll keep it, and I'll think, man, this would look cool in my museum, because I have a museum, as you know, in Asheville, North Carolina. It's the Asheville Mystery Museum with all kinds of things. And so I have this problem where I'll get one of these twisted things, and I'm like, maybe this will work in my museum. And then after a day or two, I say, no, this needs to be neutralized. And so I'll take it out to the ocean.
All right, up next, Josh, we're going to take phone calls, two kinds of calls I want, your ghostly Christmas story, and, for Joshua's purposes, have you ever seen Santa Claus wandering around? We'll be back.